It's about a third-generation furniture maker in Galax, Virginia, named John Bassett III. And it's really the tale of globalization told through how he took China on in a court of international trade in order to keep his 700 factory workers in Galax and Vaughan Bassett Furniture employed.
He ended up doing a lawsuit, is that correct?
He filed an anti-dumping petition in 2003, I believe it was.
Yeah. And he was successful with that.
He was. He was. He won his – he pressed his case. He and the coalition pressed their case in 2005 and again in 2010, and a 6-0 vote both times.
Wow. I wanted to talk a little bit about the reception of the book. The book is obviously, I believe it was on NPR's top list here recently. You've had opportunities to be on a number of NPR programs and other programs and going to signings and that kind of stuff. As a journalist, normally everything you do sits beneath a byline. And there's not a lot of folks looking at you. They're really consuming the story.
I am not used to being asked questions. I'm used to asking questions.
Well, you've kind of become a – I hate to say this, but in a way, your story is kind of a sidebar to the story, especially for those who are journalists and writers themselves, because this has just been an overnight success for you.
It's been really wonderful. I mean, it's just been a whirlwind. It's hard to sleep at night. It's so exciting and I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm complaining, but it'd be great to sleep again.
Now, you, how many years were you a journalist with the Toronto Times?
Just shy of 25 years, like two weeks shy of 25 years. I came here in 1989 to be a feature writer at the Roanoke Times.
How did you transition from doing that to The Factory Man? How did this book, this experience come about?
I was in the features department for many years, and then my most recent top editor, Carol Tarrant, moved me to the newsroom and she said, I'd like to see more kind of hard-hitting features on the front page and kind of enterprise series. And so I started writing about immigration and refugees. And then when the recession hit in 08, we started doing a lot of stories about people who were struggling. And I did this series called Making It, which is about people struggling in the economy to feed their families and cobbling together part-time jobs and whatnot. And this series grew out of actually some photographs that a friend of mine took. His name is Jared Sorries. And he had sort of self-assigned himself to go down to Martinsville in Henry County three times a week for about a year. And I wasn't even aware of this. I mean, we'd go out for a drink every now and then. Suddenly, his pictures were posted on the New York Times Lens blog. And I was like, Jared, these pictures are incredible. And they were very moving pictures of things like food pantry lines and a conveyor belt from an old textile mill that had been converted to a food distribution device, a minister in his 50s, unemployed and biding his time in the middle of the afternoon. They were very moving pictures. And so I said, could we collaborate with my editor, Carol's permission? And that's when this idea for this series took off. It was really just supposed to be kind of what's happened to all those 19,000 workers who lost their jobs. Did all the people leave? What's happened to them now? How are people getting by? And during the course of sort of some pre-interviewing for that series, I heard about this factory maker who had gone the other way. And that's always a good story when somebody does the counterintuitive thing. And then once I met him and saw what a character and what a totally authentic, unusual, brash person he was, I thought, this guy is gold.
What is it about this story you think that resonates so powerfully today? I mean, you not only have local interest, regional interest, statewide interest, national interest, but global interest in this story of the factory man.
Well, I think it's a hero story. He's certainly a complicated hero. We've gone through all the emotions together. We've hated each other. We've liked each other. I use the word authentic, and in my mind, I think that's part of what appeals. He's like an authentic, prickly protagonist who's going to do what he wants to do, and he's also not afraid to fight. I mean, one of the interesting things, and you know, Tab, as a reporter, it's hard to get the CEO of a company on the phone. Not so with John Bassett. He's very he tends to all the details of his business. I mean, he leaves nothing to chance. And so if I'm writing a book that's based on him, he's going to make sure that, like, he's involved in it. I mean, not to the point of reading it or anything like that or telling me what to put in it, but he doesn't leave anything to chance. And I think that's really kind of interesting, unusual. He's kind of from another generation. I don't think there are many CEOs left like that.
his involvement in being forthcoming about what ended up in Factory Man seems to indicate how he approaches furniture manufacturing, not only locally in Southern Virginia, Southwest Virginia, but also when he went over or sent his – I guess he sent his – was it he who sent his son over to China to do a little bit of investigating and find out what was going on there?
Yeah, that's a key scene in the book, and I actually begin the book. The prologue is the scene from 2002. And what has happened to the whole entire industry in the United States is this rock-bottom priced suit of furniture, a bedroom suit, has come onto the market. And there's a dresser that's wholesaling for $100. And for the life of them, Wyatt and John and Doug Bassett can't figure out how they're pulling it off. They know they have to be dumping, which means selling it for less than the cost of even the materials to produce it. And that's illegal. It's worth pointing out over and over. That is illegal, according to the WTO. When China signed on, they said they wouldn't do that. And so the only clue they had to where this suit was being manufactured was a sticker on the back that read Dalian, China. So he sent Wyatt off and he said, don't come home till you find it. They were undercover trying to find out which factory was making – was dumping basically because they wanted ammunition for this case that they were thinking about filing but they weren't sure. And when – after John went back and got eyeball to eyeball with the guy running the factory, that's when they decided for sure they were going to do it.
What is it of the reception of this book that you've been doing all the talk shows, you've been doing all the appearances at the bookstores? What is it out of this that has surprised you the most when it comes to the reception of the book and the recognition of the work that you've done?
I'm thrilled that people like it and they tell me they can't put it down. I didn't know. You know, I've read it hundreds of times. I've worked on it. I was really sick of it by the time I turned it in. And I couldn't tell if it was any good at all. My husband said it was, but he loves me, so who knows, right?
Yeah.